Whenever we went to one or another of the contact sites or photo sites where the UFO pictures were taken, we saw low-flying reconnaissance spotter craft pass over our heads, and we even photographed some of them. It was quite obvious that we were the ones being watched. Mia continued to press his advantage. You mentioned something in the last meeting. You told me that I could once came with you to the Pleiades. Samjays, surely, but this will only be a short part of a larger trip, because the aim, seen from Earth, is many light years distance. Mia Media, that is fantastic. I only wanted to take photographs there. By regret, the last pictures have nearly all been about the travel to Saturn. Either they were overexposed, or the film was just black. Samjays, this, unfortunately, had to be expected, because you may need for such cases, special equipment. Mia, nevertheless, I will try again on the next trip. If just some pictures would be successful for me, even halfway, then I am content. Samjays, besides this, there is a chance that we will take you up with us again on the next meeting, for a further special flight. More, we also want to see whether you are able to make certain pictures, for we have produced in this aim a special apparatus. Mia, what shall I photograph? Samjays, you will recognize this soon enough, but now my time is over again, for I still have to carry out different duties. On Tuesday, the 15th of July 1975, at 9:46 a.m. one of the by now becoming familiar thought transmissions, the 30th contact was received. This contact advised Mia of and instructed him to prepare for a longer absence for this proposed trip. Samjays, I have received your different thoughts but could not respond immediately, as my present task occupies me very much. And as I now take up contact with you today, it will be, for certain reasons, for only a short time. Prepare yourself to be ready in the early morning hours of the 17th of May, which is within 2 days. At a given time I will call you then, and take you from a suited location. You should equip yourself with sufficient film material, as this will be of some importance. Prepare yourself further to be absent for a longer time, because you will undertake ... a further flight, which is not possible even to many space-traveling creatures. Within this universe are few forms of life able to overcome such great distances, because this is only possible through hyperspace. Where this has been made possible by advanced technical developments, the universe offers no limits. Also, space and time are no longer barriers, and so as well, the barrier between universes can be negotiated. As you know from former times, so also are known time journeys for certain forms of life. Mia, do you know these things? Samjays, surely, as ask it is well known to me. But, please do not interrupt me, because my time for this contact is very short. We will not be able to accomplish the coming travel in my small ship, as for such trips it is unsuited. Me shall go over to a great space-fitted ship. So prepare for altogether at least 30 hours of your time to be absent, because with this ship we will travel far outside the star formations known to. More also, you should have an opportunity to make some pictures, and possibly to view, from a distance, the ancient home planet of our human races. Today it presents a peculiar sight, originating in the destruction of a great star. The destruction took place a very long time ago. Because of its sun-like shape, this formation is called IHWH Harta. This name means, translated into your language, Eye of God. According to your astronomical catalogues, you find this Eye of God within the stars of Lyra, and you call it the Ring Nebula of Lyra, or H57. These are the concerns I had to report today. If now you still have a question, then I have a short time to answer. Mia, I feel myself placed into a kingdom of fantasy, Samjays, but tell me, where in the sky or heaven can I find this Eye of God? Samjays, to do this you need a bigger telescope. Samjays later explained that their ancestors, and ours, descended from the refugees from the great sun system, some of whom fled to the Pleiades and other places in their escape from destruction. Mere pity, in respect to the planned journey, I still have one question. When I count the distance in kilometers, What is the number? Sam J's, it exceeds all your mathematical possibilities of calculation manifold. Telling the number, which I could give you, but only in my terms, would in consequence be absurd. Mia, but then a few hours will not be sufficient. Sam J's, you forget about the negation of time and space by hyperspace. Mia, dear me, then this will become just a short trip to the end of the universe, a travel into eternity, so to speak? Sam J's, your thoughts are wrong, for we don't reach an end of the universe, for such an end does not exist. Apparently time and space as we understand them in our material universe are physical properties of our material continuum, which may be bypassed by raising the vibrations of the field, within a protective field, to a frequency above the physical chemical realm, where the laws and properties of the material world no longer constrain matter and all in the field responds to the new laws simultaneously, such as for spirit. The big day, the 31st contact, was on Thursday the 17th of July 1975, when the Pleiadians picked Mia up at a very carefully selected location at 10:14 a.m. For this 31st contact with the extraterrestrials in less than 6 months, Edouard J. Mia had made his plans as required, allowing for an absence of over 30 hours. He got up early and completed his preparations. He loaded his bike and waited for the signal. When it came and the rendezvous point was identified, he bid farewell to his family and started out for the remote and very inaccessible location, so difficult to negotiate even with his moped that it would certainly discourage followers. Arriving at the signified location, he unloaded the equipment he would carry and carefully hid his vehicle against accidental discovery. Shortly after this, the spacecraft arrived, and he was greeted by the now quite familiar extraterrestrial woman. He looked at his watch. It was 10:14 and he was immediately taken into the ship along with his equipment brought for the trip. They rose into the ship in a beam of energy and it took right off on the greatest event in Mia's entire life. After that trip he was brought back to the same spot, retrieved his moped, still undisturbed, and rode all the way home in wonder and contemplation. He was totally exhausted and went right to bed and slept. After resting from the strain of all the excitement, Mia's got up, washed his face, and went out and settled himself at his desk in the little shed to receive the transmission. Suddenly he was tuned in and the transmission was received as before, rapidly, continuously, with no repeats, and no stopping for corrections, in one long uninterrupted run until the first transmission was complete. He had filled scores of pages. Then he was allowed to rest for a day, and another segment came through the same way. This was repeated a number of times until the full account had been received and documented there on paper. Some of this contact has already been reported in the preliminary investigation report. More will be reported in a greater presentation of the Pleiadian messages at a future time. For our purpose now we shall abstract from the reports a little more of the time aboard the Great Spacer Mother Ship. Aboard the Mother Ship the first part of the spectacular interplanetary space trip was summarized in 12 pages of Chapter 7 of the Preliminary Investigation Report, and will not be repeated here. It may be well, however, to briefly summarize that coverage, and make a few corrections to the information available to us at that time. We had recorded several descriptions covering various parts of the trip but did not actually have all the contact notes in our possession and translated at that time. Those notes, obtained and translated later, showed that upon receiving confirmation of the trip for that morning, and the location of the rendezvous site, Mia set out, driving his already loaded moped, being telepathically guided over less crowded route sections, and he arrived on scene at about 9:30. Me the time he had unloaded his bike and had safely hidden it from accidental discovery, it was after 10 o'clock. He readied his equipment for quick pickup as he waited, and the spacecraft showed up a few minutes after that and he was taken aboard. He turned and took pictures of his departure before the iris-like opening in the bottom of the ship was closed. They had brought a special camera screen. The first part of that trip was to Venus to check on something, where Mia took more photos. Here we find that what Mia always took for windows were now described as multi-purpose sensors. They were sometimes transparent, but they changed colors and clarity of their transparency under different conditions, sometimes even becoming even opaque. For that reason, the themselves relied primarily on their 3D viewing screens for sight. It was a special adaptation of this technology within a portable unit that had the illumination adjustment and viewing controls on it, including zoom and viewing frequency control. This unit was similar to the ship's normal viewing screens, which picked up a much wider range of frequencies than our visual range, but this device had been modified to step them down to our visual range, so that Mia's camera could record them in our sight frequencies in the colors we can sense. This also must have given the extraterrestrials control over all that Mia saw and photographed off the imaging screen of this device. They penetrated the Venus cloud layer and broke out underneath at what some Jays said was about 40 kilometers. There was clear visibility underneath, and Mia could see the surface of the planet very clearly and described a cratered surface with a medium-high range of mountains to the right and a wide plain to the left. He said he saw no mountains in the polar area. Surprisingly, the astronomy magazine for August 1976 described almost the same thing from soundings later made by space probes. These magazine pictures arrived more than 1 year after Mia's trip. The spacecraft approached Mercury and Mia took a picture of it through the viewing instrument. After that, they checked on something on one of the satellites of Saturn and returned to Earth in time to observe the Apollo-Soyuz space docking that day at about 16:30 by Mia's watch. Again, Mia shot pictures of the space docking, using the same special viewing screen provided. In the ship's screens, Mia could see other spacecraft in the vicinity there which did not show up on his special screen. When he asked about this, the ET Sam Jays said that those other craft were surrounded by energy fields and could only be picked up on special scanners, which his device did not have access to. After that, they proceeded to the Gross Rama, Great Spacer, mother ship in distant space. It was a huge pyramidal craft with a great central sphere 10.6 miles car, 17 kilometers, in diameter, with three auxiliary spheres nearly 4 miles in diameter each arranged in a triangle, on extended legs to one side of the central sphere. One was an agricultural module, one was a basic materials generator, and the third was a technological manufacturing facility which produced all the finished consumer goods required by the community and equipment. The central sphere was the living center for 144,000 people. I must confess that when the 144,000 figure was given to me initially, I was told that it was a rounded figure. It sounded too mystical to me at the time, so I rounded it to 143,000 inhabitants in my preliminary investigation report. That was a mistake on my part, and I take full responsibility for my error. Actually, as the population is not static, it could as easily have been up to 145,000 also, and still been as accurate as the given 144,000 figure. What if the base figure is correct? And what if that is the real source of the mystical figure quoted in the Christian Bible? The hangar deck alone, in the lower levels of the big mother ship, covered square miles of area, and Mia saw hundreds, perhaps even thousands, an uncountable number of ships of many sizes and types in there. When he asked what they did with so many ships, he was told that they may have as many as 500 out on missions at a given time, in our solar system and elsewhere. Clearly, this was a stupendous operation. They were taken in a transport vehicle inside of that great spacer to a control center where Mia was introduced to Sam Jays's father, Peter, who did not speak the German language and used a translating device to communicate with Mia. Ta said the great spacer was already moving toward their transmit position, and showed her Mia some of the control instruments. That is where we left off in the preliminary report. And now Mia is seated in his little lean-to den, and has made himself ready for reception. Sam Jays, today is your great day. Mia, after all you have told me, I feel the same way. Sam Jays, you had to think about what would be expected. But now I must explain for this time, that you will have to keep silence about certain concerns. At a later time I will be able to allow you to tell about the experience. For that, I will leave out of the transmission of the report certain things of which you may not speak. But come now, first we make a journey through your solar system. We go to the ship and are lifted up inside by the transport beam, and only a few seconds after this the ship floats up high and I shoot from about 50 meters height some dia pictures of the environment of the departure point. I take the pictures partly from straight above, and partly from the side. I can take these pictures still through the entrance hatch as we climb very slowly higher. After shooting the pictures, Sanjay's closes the hatch, and within seconds the ship rushes up to several kilometers height without my noticing any pressure or any other change. Everything is just like I was standing on solid ground on the Earth. Different sudden alternations of the course produced no bodily effect, though I can see through the windows aboard that at different times we shoot along in the craziest movements, like a great pendulum. It was from those transmissions and subsequent discussions that we abstracted the part of this trip published in our preliminary report. As soon as the trip got underway, Mia busied himself examining in detail the special device the ETs had provided for his photographing efforts. This viewing screen looks to me like clear glass, through which everything outside can be observed. Only I see that this whole viewing screen is very finely scanned, sharpened image, similar to laser scanned photographs. The size of the screen was about 50 centimeters by 50 centimeters, while the color radiation device is installed inside the side of it and recessed, and thus I could not examine its inner workings. Besides this device, there were many most different apparatus of all kinds all around the cockpit room, installed within a circular control console and in the walls. These strange appearing apparatus, which I had already seen on the first flight, quite evidently serve for the guiding and controlling of the beam ship, while evidently so serving as well for exploration devices, distance meters, radiation control means and other things, and play an important role in the operation of the flight machine. All of the viewing and picture display screens differ basically from all other known to me apparatus of the same character, of Earth origin. All of the forms, symbols and figures in these screens were displayed in beautiful and often fantastic colors and arrays, and were displayed in depth, contrary to the known to me Earth display or picture screens, which in practice are only able to show displays of signs and pictures by foreground, flat two-dimensional, no depth, images, while these screens here showed everything in vivid three-dimensional effect, like they were materially real, and not only generated by impulses. We must remember that this was all taking place in 1975, before we had multicolor liquid crystal displays and three-dimensional television. Mia's first impressions of the huge mother ship, including their approach and entrance into it through an open port, the fantastically large parking bay and the many hundreds of other ships seen, some being worked by part mechanical, part organic human-like creatures evidently used in labor operations, the transparent metal walls, the floating shuttle transport cars used inside the huge sphere, etc., were all described in the preliminary report, up through the introduction to Sanjay's father. They are now en route to the transmit position, which Ta says will take about 30 minutes of our time. Ta and Sanjay's turned themselves to the instruments at a horseshoe-shaped formation. Small light bodies illuminate and a dark picture screen comes alive. Strange forms and symbols appear on it. Other imaging displays are active. Then Mia hears a tone, a very soft and soothing singing of metal. He looked up at the transparent cupola and saw the scene wash away in a whitish milky veil. This only lasted a very short moment, and suddenly he could see stars again. He felt great tranquility inside him. Then he heard Sanjay's voice, and wondered about this as Ta had asked for silence. He wondered if something had gone wrong to delay the transmission? It had already been acquished for the first hyperleap of a number that they would undertake in the next few hours. Before the great spacer reached its transmit position, Sanjay's had sent one of the robotoid creatures back to her beamship in the hangar bay to bring the special imaging device to the control room for Mia to use in an effort to take pictures outside the ship. We now turned to him here and suggested he try. Sanjay's, if you want, you can try some photographs here, but whether they will succeed I cannot estimate. By regret we do not know whether Earth cameras can take pictures through the cupola. But this we will know after you have developed your films. If you like, we can use the equipment brought from my beamship. Mia, Dash, I will be thankful for the instrument, Sam Jays, for with that it certainly will succeed. But what is the matter? Is there no success with the transmission? Dot. Sam Jays, haven't you noticed? Mia, I have, but I can't explain. Sam Jays, then you need only look out the cupola into space. Now what do you see there? Mia girl, there are completely other formations of stars than I know from Earth. Of course I know only a few by sight, but I see none that I can recognize. Why is that? Sam Jays, we have made the first hyperleap. Mia, this, man alive, dear, from that. Where are we now then? Sam Jays, you are around 500 light years from your homeworld. There, look there above, that formation of stars there, that is our homeworld, these are the Pleiades. We are only 211 million kilometers from the nearest star. Unfortunately we cannot arrive closer, because we need a safe distance to be able to transmit again. Perhaps you can succeed nevertheless in getting some pictures with the apparatus, which has already been brought. Coming from somewhere, an android appears, bringing the photographic device. Very cleverly it assembles it inside a frame and places it in order. Suddenly the thing speaks to me, and once more I am flattered although I understand not a word. Sam Jays quickly enlightens me. Sam Jays, it wishes you a good success. Mia, but that is impossible. Can this thing think and act independently? That would be crazy. Dash, but nevertheless it does. Sam Jays, its whole bodily construction is half organic, and its brain chemical. It is real, and highly developed. You will understand this better after a short time when it is more normal, for you. It is only the newness that makes it strange. But take care now about the photos, because the next leap is being prepared. I follow the suggestion and hope the pictures come out. I keep thinking about Ta's words. He is correct, as the strange phenomena of the transparent metal in the space capsules, and the same with the hangar walls, and now the dome here in the control center, already do not seem so strange. The same with the photographic apparatus, and the viewing screens, and the whole control center and instruments. Ta is right. It is only a matter of familiarity. Ta, you are in thoughts, my friend. Watch the stars, in 9 seconds we start the next jump. Mia asked about a symbol form of writing or recording that he observed aboard the ship, and asked how old it was and where did it originate. Sam Jays, that is easy to explain. These letters we are using here are only 11,000 years old, and we have taken them over, at that time from our ancestors, who lived on Earth. Our older letters and script form was much more complex, while this here now is much easier. This script form was developed by different of our scientists on Earth who used for a pattern, the scene from the Earth star formations. They connected certain star pictures by lines, and the result evolved into these forms. As our script consists of small circles and lines, the circles represent stars and the lines just connect them. Mia, that's interesting, and your explanation suffices for me in that. This script is no more known on the Earth. Sam Jays, it has only been forgotten, but it was in use many centuries ago, during which it was often changed in detail. Still, some few scripts of Earth humans today are simply altered forms of these shapes that have been made into letters, which trace back to our old symbols. Mia, this is astonishing. Then the script on Earth was not developed by Earthmen themselves? Sam Jays, if you speak of the earthbound forefathers of your human races, and not of the heavenly ancestors, then you are correct. It was first brought by the sons of heaven, who are the ones responsible for the re-emergence of Earth humans from savagery. They were getting ready for the next hyperleap, a big one, and Mia wished he could record the sensations of the event so he could write them down in detail later. Sam Jays, that's not difficult. The booths, which you can see there, beside the picture screens, are equipped with all necessary means to store up feelings and thoughts. The thought impulse is received as stored in a special computer and can later, as may be desired, be repeated word for word from the recording. The helmet, shapeable and adaptable in size, which you see there, is equipped with very fine sons and is as well covered by a special, fine mesh net of sons which pick up every kind of energy and transforms it into impulses, which are then transmitted to the computer where they are registered and stored. The energy of thoughts and feelings is measured in very high values and can be received only through those instruments. The energies of feelings and thoughts exist only in very high frequency fields, or hyperfrequencies. To now be able to register your thoughts and feelings, it is necessary for you to place yourself into the chair and lay the head under the helmet cap, which then will adapt itself automatically to your head. Mia, that's all I have to do? Sam Jays, no, that is not all. But now place yourself in the booth. The great journey starts in 23 seconds. Mia, at your service, Miss General. As Sam Jays explained to me, I quickly sit down inside one of those three booths, in the extremely comfortable chair. As soon as I have seated myself, the peculiar helmet moves over my head and sinks down silently. It is big enough that it closes around my whole head, and only leaves my face open, thus I can see and watch everything. But the helmet is not touching my head, only lying close around it, keeping about 1.5 centimeters distance to the skull, as I can see when I placed my forefinger between the helmet and my head. Now I am tense and expectant, for I wonder what is going to happen. Ta and Sam Jays manipulate the apparatus. That hyperleap over, Mia asks where they are now, as he recognizes nothing familiar outside. Sam Jays, Ta, have reached our goal. Mia, better explain to me now, just what are we actually going to do here? Sam Jays has said to me that she would have to execute here a special task. Sam Jays, just let yourself be surprised, my dear friend. After about 10 minutes you will understand all, and surely, as well, will be delighted. Mia Dash, well, as I see it, we are moving through space, only in front of us I see a star, which is getting bigger and bigger, and far behind that, I can see 5 small blue points. What kind of a star is that, and what are the blue points? Duh, that is Kultos, the last point in this space. Being 2 times as large as your home system, it has a greater luminosity. The blue points visible beyond are also stars. They are self-radiant blue stars which generate very intense light. You may not be able to see with the naked eye, but there are not 5 of those, but 11 stars. If you want, you may of course take pictures of them. Mia, yes, I will, and get the pictures directly through the cupola. I'll alternate a little, taking some through your device and then I will just take pictures through the cupola. That way I can later see which photographs come out better. I wonder which will. Continues below here, inserted comment, Ta, that is up to you. You may do as you prefer. Mia, thanks, but what about the blue stars over there? How big are they, and is there any life on them? Ta, they are no bigger than your homeworld, although this kind of star is normally 5 to 6 times as big. They are as inhospitable and hostile to life as the great planets of your solar system, such as Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus. The gravity alone makes life very rarely possible on these stars, and not even any spiritual forms of life are at home on them. And in the few exceptions, the existing creatures are very small, not exceeding a height or size of 70 centimeters. The gravity of such stars would damage them if they were larger. But of course, this is different for each such star or planet, while the atmosphere itself plays no role, because different forms of life are accommodated to having different atmospheres. So, not all creatures breathe oxygen like ourselves and Earth humans. Mia, but it is said that very great planets or stars may be inhabited, too, by accordingly greater forms of life, if there is life at all on them? Duh, so it happens only in certain well-defined circumstances. About this, the science of Earth is in error. If life so existed on your planets Jupiter, Saturn and Uranus, then the forms of life would have to be semi-material only, etheric, and very small. This is not the case that greatness fosters greatness. For this special case, greatness can only be conquered by smallness, but only if of extraordinarily stable form. On your planets Jupiter, Saturn and Uranus, great forms of life would never be able to survive. But as you know, no such creatures are at home on these planets, neither material nor spiritual.